For the next 2 weeks, you will hear from Gary, from John Bosworth, from John Moore, I believe, from Rob, from George, maybe Ethan too, I'm not sure, but I have just listed quite a lineup. This church is very blessed. In fact, Steve prayed something like, "We're thankful for all the many blessings that you give to us," and this church is very blessed to have so many capable people that can not only live righteous lives, but also present so well from this pulpit here. Which reminds me that it is my privilege that you allow me to speak to you so often, and I don't want you to think that I am ungrateful for allowing me to speak and then for allowing me not to speak also for several weeks. I'm grateful for that. Today's lesson, the title of today's lesson is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I'm going to begin with the following question. What do the following scenarios have in common? A young lion in close proximity to a calf. A young lion near, I could have used that word, that would have been easier. A mature lion in close proximity to an ox. A wolf in close proximity to a lamb. A leopard in close proximity to a goat. A bear near a cow. A cobra near a baby. And a viper near a toddler. We're going to answer this question. You might think you know the answer, but just to make sure you do. On the way in, totally randomly, having nothing to do with this lesson, Ivy said that she's not scared of jaguars. We're going to begin in Acts 28. In Acts 28, Paul, after having been shipwrecked, lands on the island that is called Malta. The natives showed us extraordinary kindness, for because of the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they had kindled a fire and received us all. But when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on fire, a viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself to his hand. Verse 6, they were expecting that he was about to swell up or suddenly fall down dead. To answer the question, this is what would happen in this latter two scenarios. If you put a toddler or a baby next to a viper or a cobra, it's going to lash out and stick its fangs into the person's body somewhere. I wonder how that felt, or how normally it would have felt. I don't know if Paul felt anything there. But how would it normally feel? Maybe like a wasp sting? Maybe worse? Like stapling yourself? Jacob knows about that. We all do, or most of us do, really. I've done it myself. Maybe like stepping on a nail? I don't know what it felt like, but let me ask you this. Who wants to find out? Nobody. You're right. Usually this ends up in swelling and or death. Who wants to go through that? Nobody. A viper is nobody's friend. When we're mowing the lawn and we see a snake slither off real quick, what do? And that's only a garter snake. This is a viper, nobody's friend. John 10, in John 10, Jesus is talking about being the good shepherd. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. But he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. Okay, this word snatches, even the New American Standard, in the New King James, in the King James, the word is catches. And that reminds me of tag. That's not what this is talking about here. It's the same word that in verse 28, Jesus says, no one will snatch them out of my hand, but you know that Satan is trying to tear them out of the hand. The same thing here with the wolf. And that's what you picture. Sorry to get gory for a minute, but you picture this wolf coming in and grabbing one around the scruff of the neck and dragging this lamb off as it twitches and thrashes. Half an hour later, you come across the scene and what's there but a dead body with a hole in it and entrails all over the place and blood everywhere. That's why when the wolf comes, those who can scatter from it. This is what happens in this scenario. Now, As a point of interest, the wolf, I've read, this wolf weighs around 100 pounds. The viper doesn't weigh that much, does it? But let me ask you this question. Would you rather face the viper or the wolf? I'll take door number three. I don't want any of them. This is emphasizing that even the little viper causes chaos and problems, and we don't want to go around it. Back in 1 Kings 13, this is the story, the narrative, of the prophet who went and pronounced judgment on Jeroboam, the king of the northern tribe. And God had said to him, when you go, on the way back through, you don't eat anything, you go in one way, you go out another way. On the way back through, an older prophet comes up to him and lies to him and says, God told you to stay here, and now God is about to pronounce judgment on this first prophet for not having listened to him because he stopped by and he ate some food. 1 Kings 13, verse 24. When he had gone, a lion met him on the way and killed him, and his body was thrown on the road, and the donkey standing beside it, and the lion was standing beside the body. Here's the king, by the way. We've just been introduced to the king. If you want to think of something that's ferocious in the wild, the first thing that pops in your head is the lion. And what makes this odd is that the lion is just sitting there like a puppy dog next to this body. Now, we know what normally would happen to that body, don't we? I won't get into the details again. Judges 14, verse 5. We covered this week in Bible class. Samson, that is. I knew I'd say that. Didn't help, I was looking at Samuel. Samson, in chapter 14, verse 5, Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came as far as the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came roaring toward him. Roaring at him. We up the road from our house is a petting zoo, a closed petting zoo. There's a camel there now, a couple llamas, things like that. There used to be a lion. And what I have heard from the neighbors is that lion would roar. And when guests came to their houses, the neighbors' houses, they'd hear this roar of a lion and they'd say, "What is that?" When the lion roars, it's telling you it's the king. And it's going to snap his body like a twig. If it weren't for the Spirit of the Lord coming on Samson, that's what would have happened. It's the king. Now, this is what happens when the lion gets with the calf. In the story here, in both of these stories here, we've seen so far that the lion attacks a man. In our scenarios, all of the victims are innocent and defenseless. I don't know what's going on. I'm shutting it off. Innocent and defenseless. They can't do anything. Can you imagine your child, your baby, being attacked by any of these? We would do anything we could to make sure it didn't happen. It would be horrible. 1 Samuel 17. Goliath. David steps up and he says, "I'm going to beat up Goliath." And King Saul says, "I don't think so. You're unable to," is what he says the verse before. And David says, "No, I am able to. Watch, listen to this." Verse 34. "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him." Now understand that this is not the norm. That's what makes this impressive. He's saying, "I can beat up this big guy because I've done these other things." Most people have not done these other things. Most people would not have. They would have ran or be dead. "Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear." Verse 37, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear." Have you ever seen one? Huge. This lion, this bear comes out. It is said that when he attacked him, the bear came out. Verse 35, "He rose up against me." The bear is saying, "I'm the boss. This is what's about to happen. Look at my paw." I've read that they will take and they will swing their paw and break the backs of whatever it is they're swinging their paws at. That's what they normally do. Here's the question. Do you want to be in this situation? You know, a few months ago, I saw three cub bears across the road. The first thing I did was went home. The second thing I did is looked up on the internet, how do you protect yourself from a bear? And they said this, the best defense is to lie down and play dead. What? I read that over and over. Lie down and play dead. You don't want to be in that situation. If that's the best there is, this is what a bear does to you. And then Jeremiah 5. Jeremiah 5. The text is talking about the coming judgment. Why is Israel going to be judged? Judah going to be judged? Because they are depraved, really. They're utterly depraved. Verse 1. Roam to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. Look now and take note. See if there's one man who does righteousness. So Jeremiah goes and he looks and he says, no, there isn't. But then he says, wait a minute, those are the poor people. Maybe it's just the poor people. We'll find some righteousness in the higher up people. Well, he goes, verse 5, the end of it. They too, with one accord, have broken the yoke and burst the bonds. They're all sinners. So the Lord says, therefore, a lion from the forest will slay them, a wolf of the deserts will destroy them, and a leopard is watching their cities. Everyone who goes out of them will be torn to pieces. This is what happens. Our friend, who we're going to see in just a couple days now, Jake, he hunts these things with dogs. And they'll go out with several dogs. Many of them will go out with several dogs. And what they'll say is this cat, they call it a cat, runs up the tree. I've told you this before. And then the cat will just wait. And if the cat gets bored and is sick of waiting, he'll come down and he'll start to take the dogs one at a time, grab it with a paw, bring it to his mouth, sink its claws in its head, crush its skull, dump it, and take the next dog and do the same thing, and he can do it all day long. They will lose multiple dogs at one time because of this very thing. This is what happens when you find yourself in these scenarios. Here's the short of it. What happens in this scenario? One of these isn't going to last long, and I'll let you figure out which one, right? Something to note about the nature of these. The bear, the leopard, the wolf, the lion, and the lion are all aggressors. Remember, the bear comes along and stands up. The lion jumps out and growls. The wolf comes in. The cobra and the viper, they won't go out and attack normally. When they attack is when they feel threatened. That's when they're biting. They're retaliating. The lion, the wolf, and the leopard remind me of what Marcy has described her older brother. When they were young children, Matt would come in, and the two would be playing, Dan and Marcy would be playing very nicely, and in comes Matt. And he's just looking for something to do. The viper and the cobra are like the person who we all say this about. He's nice, but don't get on his bad side. Nice guy until he gets back at you, right? This is a little discussion just about their nature. It's no surprise that God uses these figures to describe himself, people, and events. In fact, we do the same thing. John Bosworth the other day was telling me, he was putting up the roof, he was putting it all by himself, and he messed up his shoulder. I can imagine he had a bear of a time wrestling with those big sheets of metal, didn't he? We say that somebody is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That snake in the grass. We use this all the time. God does too. Check, consider these. When Absalom was considering whether he should chase his father, Ahithophel says, yes, go get him. And Hushai says, no, don't. Why not? Because David and his men are fierce like a bear robbed of her cubs. Don't provoke David. Judah is a lion's whelp. The book of Judges that we're studying now opens with, who should lead us to war? Judah. It closes with, who should lead us against Benjamin? Judah. They're ready to go. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. When Judah leads the rest of Israel, except for Benjamin, against Benjamin, Benjamin fights back all by itself and wins the first several fights. A ravenous wolf is Benjamin. You brood of vipers. Remember, that's what John says to the Pharisees. I think we know what he thinks about them, don't we? This brings up another point. These figures are sometimes similes, other times they're metaphors. A simile is one that has the word like or as or something like that. David and his men are like a bear. A metaphor doesn't have the comparative word. Is, Judah is a lion's whelp. But we're not confused about what he's saying here, are we? We don't think, okay, David is like a bear, I understand that, but Judah is a lion's whelp, so Judah was literally a little lion. No, we don't get confused about that. The devil prowls around like a roaring lion. Jesus tells Herod's people, go tell that fox. Is there a barking dog with a fluffy tail on the throne? No, we don't get confused about that, do we? Note well, if you read about a vicious animal in the Bible, it might not be referring to an actual vicious animal. This is clear as daylight for us. This brings us to the second part of our lesson, the witch. Isaiah chapter 11. In Isaiah 11, the first part of it is a prophecy of Jesus. A shoot will spring from the stem of Jesse, a branch from his roots. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding. He will be righteous. That's describing the coming Messiah. Verse 6 talks about something else. Verse 6 makes a transition. The wolf will dwell with the lamb. If you were wondering where I got my little scenarios, you'll recognize it. The wolf will dwell with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the young goat. The calf and the young lion and the fatling together. The little boy will lead them. The cow and the bear will graze. Their young will lie down together. The lion will eat straw like the ox. The nursing child will play by the hole of the cobra. And the weaned child will put his hand on the viper's den. The nursing child is literally a child who cannot speak. So your version might have something else, but that's the way mine... You get the idea. One that hasn't been weaned, and one that's tiny. Babies. The question is, by the way, here's the application, right? Is this literal language referring to actual animals, or figurative language actually referring to something non-animal, or not these animals at least? Which is it? The lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. Okay. One man says, Campbell Morgan, who's taught at Moody Bible Institute and other places, says you cannot spiritualize that passage. Cannot. Why not? Either I missed a memo or he missed this memo. Maybe we should go tell him about this. Or maybe he needs to tell us something about this. Why not? One man wrote, the description of wolves and other carnivores becoming vegetarian in the kingdom age is hard to interpret biologically. He said, hey, something funny is going on here. I'm not really sure if it's impossible, like this man Campbell Morgan says. Well, a couple things to look at here. Number one, 9, just continuing, I stopped in 8, we continue on. They will not hurt or destroy. See, that's what it said. There's the lion and it's next to the ox. It's not hurting it. It's just sitting there. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord. That word for, this word right here, can be interpreted when, at that time, while, things like that. In other words, here's what's going on. Here's what's happening. This thing is happening. It just described all these weird things are going on. Maybe something else is happening at the same time. That word can be translated that. But do you know, I have, I think, 17 translations, and not one of them, even the Spanish one, translates it while, at that time, or anything else. They are all for. It is the basis for. You see, there is a change that has happened. Verse 6, the wolf will dwell with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the young goat. Why? Why? What's going on here? Something is not right. Their nature has changed. Whatever it is has to do with the earth being full of the knowledge of the Lord. So, if this is literal, I have a suggestion for you. Find a lion and preach to it. Go to it. Because all this weirdness is happening because the earth is full of the knowledge of the Lord. We went into the Toronto Zoo not too long ago. There was a grizzly bear on the other side of a piece of glass that was too thin, if you ask me. It was lunchtime for him. And you know where he was? He was from me to John Bosworth away. That's how close he was. And you know what he was looking at? Us. That's what he was looking at. Now, what if I had gotten out my Bible and said, let's remove this piece of glass, and I'm going to read to him, just for the fun of it, Isaiah chapter 11. Right there, you know, it's not literal, is it? Nobody would do that. There's a couple other hints in this also. Isaiah 35, I understand some of this is very similar to last week's lesson. That's why I get to truncate it a little bit this week. Isaiah 35, verse 8. A highway will be there. Here's a passage that everybody agrees is talking about the same time. Whatever's happening in Isaiah 8 refers to the same time as Isaiah 8 refers to the same time as Isaiah 35. A highway will be there, a roadway. It will be called a highway of holiness. No, the unclean will not travel on it, but there will be for him who walks that way, and fools will not wander on it. No lion will be there, nor will any vicious beast go up on it. Wait a minute. Did you read that? No lion will be there. Well, yeah, what does it say over there in Isaiah chapter 11? Lions will be there. One of them is not literal, or both of them are not. And we understand that Isaiah 35, verse 5, is talking about John the Baptist. And we read that in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. If you didn't miss it, if you didn't get it in the first gospel, you got it in another three. Then back in Isaiah 11, verse 9, I skipped over this. This is also from last week's lesson. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy, and here's our word, mountain. If you were here last week, you probably know already anyway. You compare Isaiah 2, Daniel 2, Joel 2, and Acts 2, and you come up with, oh, the mountain is fulfilled in Acts chapter 2. That's from last week's lesson. You can get it on the internet. No fees will apply. And then, did you notice in verse 13, what we're talking about is a change of nature. Is this talking about beasts? We understand it's a change of nature. Is it talking about literal animals? Look in verse 13. At that time, then, the jealousy of Ephraim will depart, and those who harass Judah will cut off. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah, and Judah will not harass Ephraim. Are Judah and Ephraim animals? Not at all. They're people, aren't they? This is saying verses 6, 7, 8, look, here's going to be a situation. He describes it with animals, and then we come in verse 13. It says, here's the application. These people are going to act differently than they used to. Ephraim and Judah, they're not going to get along like siblings anymore. They're going to get along like older siblings now who love each other. Isaiah 10, then in that day, the nations will resort to the root of Jesse, who will stand as a signal for all the peoples, and his resting place will be glorious. You know from last week also, this is quoted in Romans chapter 15. Turn to Romans 15. We'll spend the rest of our time in this one passage. Romans 15, verse 12. Isaiah says, there shall come the root of Jesse, and he who arises to rule over the Gentiles, in him shall the Gentiles hope. Now, if you hold your New Old Testament and look at those together, they look different. But if you have the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew text, you would say, hey, wait a minute, that's word for word, Isaiah chapter 11, verse 10. In other words, Paul is saying, you know what Isaiah talked about back there in Isaiah 11? Here it is. What's the context again? Verse 7. Therefore, accept one another, just as Christ also accepted us. Jews and Gentiles, that's the situation. They're fighting. They're being lions and bears against each other. And Paul is saying, stop being a lion, stop being a bear. Why? Because Isaiah said, you better stop, because this is the era we live in. This is not talking about literal animals that are vicious. It's talking about people whose natures have changed. They were aggressors, and they no longer are. Now they're pacifists. That's the general idea. And this brings us to the wardrobe. Verse 12, he quotes from Isaiah, and he says, look, you live in this time. So, verse 7 is the situation. Therefore, accept one another. The alternative is, or what they're doing right there, is they're not accepting one another. That's the alternative. We've got a bear here. We've got a lion, a leopard. We've got vipers and cobras. They're acting that way. And he's saying, look, stop acting that way. That is the context. If you back up a little bit to verses 1 and 2, you'll see him say, now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those who are without strength and not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. Okay, you notice there are two kinds of bears. There's the bear that comes out and kills people, and then there's the bear that bears the weaknesses of others. The difference is selfishness or selflessness. We ought to bear the weaknesses of those who are without strength and not just please ourselves. That is the difference. What makes the bear, is selfishness. That is the key. The question is, how do we fix ourselves from this selfishness? How can I be changed from a bear into an innocent child, a lamb, a young goat? How can this happen? This is what we'll see here. Back up. Chapter 14, verses 20. Do not tear down. Stop there. That sounds like the bear. We've got a bear in the room. Somebody's tearing something down. Do not tear down the work of God for the sake of food. All things indeed are clean, but they are evil for the man who eats and gives offense. It is good not to eat meat or drink wine or to do anything by which your brother stumbles. The faith which you have as your own conviction before the Lord. Did you notice? Now, I know the greater context here. The greater principle is they're trying to understand the authority of God. What can I do? What can I not do? The specific discussion is whether or not they can eat some types of food. They're being bears and lions over food. Twinkies. That's food. Meats sacrificed to idols, whether or not they can eat that. Meat is food. They're arguing with each other, and they're turning into bears and lions against each other over food. And here's the point. If it can happen with food, it can happen with what? Anything. Anything at all. Pick one thing. And it can happen. Not just the big things. Oh, there's some split over some big doctrinal thing. No! Some people act like bears over just the food. So we back up a little bit more. Verse 19, instead of being a bear, we pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another. Be a little innocent child. Be a lamb. Don't be a bear. Back up. Just another verse. Verse 18, for he who is in this way serves Christ is acceptable to God and approved by men. Back up to verse 15. Here's the alternative. For if because of food your brother is hurt, you are no longer walking according to love. Verse 13. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore. Sounds like we got a bear in the room. Somebody's judging one another. Verse 10. But you, why do you judge your brother? Or you again, why do you regard your brother with contempt? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. Verse 4. Who are you to judge the servant of another? To his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. We've got here somebody being a bear. Somebody's judging one another. Look in verses 1 through 3. Now this is where the context begins. Except the one who is weak in faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. One person has faith that he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats vegetables only. The one who eats is not to regard with contempt the one who does not eat, and the one who does not eat is not to judge the one who eats, for God has accepted him. Note this before we go on. Verse 4 was talking about who are you to judge? Verse 3 talks about two people. Verse 3 talks about a person with knowledge who looks at the person without knowledge and holds contempt for them. The second part of verse 3 is the person without knowledge who judges the other one. Verse 3, the one who eats is not to regard with contempt the one who does not eat. The one who does not eat is not to judge with the one who does eat, for God has accepted him. Who are you to judge another servant? You see, by the way, what's going on here is the one with knowledge says, you don't eat. The bear. The one without knowledge says, oh yeah, and he turns into the viper and says, you're condemned. That's just what happened right there. You can't eat? Well, you're pathetic. Well, you're going to be judged for doing what you do. Who are you to judge the servant of another? Both the viper and the bear get smacked in the face by God here. Now, what's at the root of all this? Selfishness. That's why these people are acting the way they are. So the question is, how? How in this world can we be different people than we already are? Look in chapter 13, verse 14. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ. That is the answer. How can I turn into somebody else? How can I change? Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and at the same time, make no provision for the flesh in regards to its lust. Look in verse 13. Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity, not in sensuality, not in strife and jealousy. That's what their issue is. Strife and jealousy. So how do we not do that? We put on the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the wardrobe that we have to wear. When we put on that wardrobe, guess what's going to happen? We're going to turn into, methodically, over time, the people that we ought to be. We're going to conform to the image of Christ. A couple other passages you can read up here. Ephesians 4:22. Lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God is being created in righteousness and holiness and truth. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak the truth to one another and his neighbor. We are members of one another. Be angry, yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. There are some types of anger that you can have. But anger towards one another in this way ain't it. We put that off. We don't look at each other with red. See each other and say, boy, that person just irks me every time. That's not who we are. We're not the bear. We put on Christ and we turn into a little child, right? Colossians chapter 3. Now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another. Since you laid aside your old self with its evil practices, you have put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. You put on the coat of Christ. And you're slowly but surely conforming to his image. A new renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew. They're dealing with the same problem. Circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, freeman. But Christ is all and in all. So as those who have been chosen by God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, forgiving one another as you have a complaint. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. How do you change? How do you go from being the bear to the bear who doesn't attack anymore? How does that happen? You put on Christ. Now, this has obviously been figurative language, hasn't it? Put on Christ. How do I do that? What, do I go to Walmart, pick up a Christ and put it on? No. 1 Peter, two more passages quickly. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 22 says, since you have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. The command is, love one another. Why? Because you have purified your souls. Well, how did I do that? How did you purify yourself? How are you purging the old self out of you? By obedience to the truth. How do you put on Christ? You pick up the Bible, you read it, and you do it. Every little part of it. That's what you do. Every little part of the law that we're under the New Testament, right? You have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls. When did this happen, by the way? Verse 23, for you have been born again, not of a seed which is perishable, but that which is imperishable. By the way, he goes on to quote from Isaiah 40, which last week we saw is also at the same time as Isaiah 11, Isaiah 2, Isaiah 35, right? But we're asking the question, when did this happen? You have been born again. When did this change begin happening? For you have been born again. What's that the language of? That's the language of the time that we were converted. That's when we said, I do, to God. Look in chapter 3, verse 21. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you. Remember that being born again in this baptism? It's talking about the same thing. When did they stop being the lion that rips everybody apart, being the lion that can lie down with a little child? It began at their baptism. Galatians 3, one last passage. Galatians 3, verse 27. All of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. The short of it is this. If you want to be on the road to rehab, it begins with baptism. That's where you say, not only am I saved of my sins, but I commit my life to being more like Jesus. It's not just, look, I'm saved and whoop-de-doo. That's in it. But you're converted. You're changed from the bear that rips and tears into the bear that will lie down with everyone else and say, I'm thankful that you love me and that I love you. And let's work together in love and in unity and grow together. This all begins at baptism. If you're a Christian and you were baptized but you never committed to changing from the bear into something else, then we urge you, we encourage you to make that change beginning right now and forevermore until Jesus comes. If you're not a Christian and you want to begin on the road to rehab, let us know as we stand and